Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Sometimes ordinary people do amazing things. Community inspiration with Tony and Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
For community inspiration, we're talking to Sergeant Leonard Benedetto, but he's known as Sergeant Benedetto to many people in Bridgeport, and he's here to talk to us about a lot that he does for the community, obviously. Sergeant, it's good to talk to you. How are you?
Good. I'm very fine.
I'm glad to talk to you this morning. First of all, I'm so sorry about the passing of your wife. I know that must have been incredibly difficult.
Thank you.
But I know after she passed away, she passed from Lou Gehrig's disease. What are you doing to give back in honor of her name, obviously, but also to help the community out?
Well, I do military honors for our veterans. It's a volunteer. And we go to the cemetery and we present the flag after they have three rounds of volley. And then they play taps. And our crew would go up, salute the casket, and present the flag to the widow or widower.
That's incredible. And I know recently you did a walk to end ALS. Isn't that correct?
Yes, ALS. We did a walk at Sherwood Island. My whole family, my eight grandchildren, my three children, and many other people who go through that. And as I was walking, I noticed the pictures, and my wife's picture there. And then the people were getting younger and younger, and it broke my heart. There was somebody there that I'd known for years, but no one ever told me he died of ALS. He was a good person. They're all good persons. And they went to heaven with the Lord. Lou Gehrig's disease started in 1939, and he died in 1941. It usually lasts only 3 years. And unless you have a feeding tube, which my lovely wife didn't want, and I don't blame her because you're not living. I've dealt with other people that had Lou Gehrig disease. My heart goes out to the family. I was very fortunate to have hospice come down here with helping us, and my three children and my grandchildren, because there was a lot of things that had to be done. They had to put her up on a lift and then wheel her into the kitchen if she wanted to go there or wherever, and eventually you lose your voice and you can't lift your arms. It's a sad disease. I only wish the Lord would help us find a cure.
I have to say, Sergeant, after what you just described, it makes me want to cry. I mean, I know what Lou Gehrig's disease is, but I have not lived through that, where I've had personally my husband or a close family member go through that. So the fact that you and your family and your wife battled that, first of all, is incredibly strong beyond anyone's measure. Well, so kudos to you. What makes you want to even get involved with ALS? Because I have to be honest, Sergeant, unless you have, I think, faith and you have a guidance with the Lord, even then, it's got to be incredibly challenging to support something that essentially took the love of your life away, but you're still drawn to helping find a cure for ALS. You're not afraid to see your wife's photo, knowing that this is what killed her. How do you find that strength to support ALS efforts in trying to find a cure?
Well, because ALS has been going on for 80 years. A lot of people don't realize that. And when my wife passed on, my oldest son, Anthony, was on one side of her, holding her hand, and I was holding her hand on the other side. When we heard her last breath, that's when my world ended. It's just incredible. I had my head in the sand because I kept on telling her, you're going to be all right. We're going to find a cure, right? But we never did. It's like any other disease. Cancer, pancreatic cancer. That's another terrible disease.
Well, Sergeant Benedetto, we appreciate that you keep fighting. You keep supporting. We are so glad that you keep your wife's legacy alive. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for being interested in this. I appreciate it also.
The thing about Lou Gehrig's disease is that there's nothing that you could do. I mean, it's an awful way to go. You mm-hmm. know, there's no way that you can make them more comfortable. It's just very, very, very debilitating. And eventually, one day, you just can't get out of bed. There's nothing that they can do for you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't really made many strides when it comes to Lou Gehrig's disease. Not much at all in the last 80 years.
No, not that we've really seen, which is why I think it's so incredible, this man. So Sergeant Benedetto, surprisingly, has been a very close friend of my grandmother's and knows my mom. And through me getting this job, we've kind of gotten to connect a lot. And just in hearing, you know, week after week, talking to him, you know, on occasion throughout the show, and him talking about his wife and the fact that he does honors and he also, you know, does these 5Ks and everything, I just was immediately like, what am I doing? How have I not put this man on community inspiration yet? I mean, for myself, you never know what the future will hold, especially for your loved ones. So to see his strength and his family and everything, I just thought there's no better person to highlight for this. He really is such an incredible person, and I feel honored that I know him. So I couldn't help but be able to share his story and, you know, what he and his family have gone through. I can only imagine how many people go through that here and across the country.
Your city, your mayor. Tony and Melissa in the morning with Mayor Joe Gatto, WICC 600.
Your Honor, it's a pleasure to have you here this morning. How are you, Mr. Gatto?
Very good. It's always, of course, my pleasure to be with you.
Okay. All right. It's our pleasure to have you. You're doing a great job, sir. And you know something? Just really quickly, I wanted to get your reaction to Saturday's Hazardous Waste Day collection. I thought it was absolutely tremendous. I think every resident showed up last Saturday over there at the Blackham School on Thorne Street. It was just amazing. The line just kept on going and going and going. You could see no end.
Well, first, thanks for promoting it, and thanks for being there on a Saturday morning. It was a beautiful day, and like you said, I think there were probably over 1,000 cars came in, got rid of their, called their hazardous waste, their, I don't know, batteries, lights. I saw a lot of paint and that kind of stuff, so it was really good. I'm glad residents took advantage of it. It was, I kept saying, it was a free service by the city. You know, we don't offer enough kind of, where people, residents of the city, feel they're getting something for their tax dollars. So I was glad we were able to do that. And thanks so much for being there. Thank the residents for coming out, clearing out, you know, the hazardous waste, keeping it out of the environment. And I guess in the way, a lot of them, I cleaned out my garage after 17 years. I heard that a couple times. So it was good. It was a pleasure to be there with you. We're going to keep doing it every year.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I know, Mayor, this is something that is on the top of the list of things that we want to talk about. For anyone who's not familiar, talk to us about what's going on with the renter's rebate. We know that this was brought to a state level, but what's happening here in Bridgeport? What's the situation?
Well, there's good news. This is one of those programs where on a state level, they are sometimes insensitive and cut what is a small subsidy that people with not huge incomes rely on to either pay their rent or to have extra dollars because of the cost of rent here in Bridgeport and across Connecticut, mostly in cities. And it's called the Renter's Rebate Program. So they fill out a form, and the city does this with them. We have great individuals who go out, fill out forms with residents, and they document their income and their residency, and they take utility bills. And they say, okay, you're going to get back a small subsidy to help you pay your rent. And people use it for different things, of course, because they're paying the rent out of their pocket all year round. And so that program finally was delayed, and we push, and now finally people got their renter's rebate subsidies, their renter rebate checks the last couple of days. So I want to thank the state of Connecticut and all those in the city of Bridgeport from our departments who made it happen. And, you know, we're fighting for this for residents because they need this. It's a small subsidy, but it means a lot to people. And there's 47,000 people across, I think it's across Connecticut. I don't know the exact breakdown in Bridgeport, but thousands who rely on renter's rebate. They got their checks in the last few days, so I'm happy for them. And we'll keep this program going. I'm committed to it, and I want to make sure that no matter what we do, we fight to make sure that people keep getting these kind of smaller but important subsidies, especially if you don't have a huge income.
We're speaking with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Gatto, our weekly visit with him. Mayor, the new amphitheater is expected to open this spring, and I understand you recently toured it. How did it look? What's happening over there?
It's phenomenal. I think one thing we probably don't do a good enough job of, and you're helping us every Wednesday morning and beyond, is getting the message out about positive things going in the city of Bridgeport. You hear a lot of people, they're busy in their lives. Some of the media outlets don't really recognize all the things that are actually happening in the city. The amphitheater, I mean, this is phenomenal. It is $25 million investment, not $100 million, but $25 million being invested by the premier entertainment company in the world, Live Nation, in partnership with the city, with the support of the city council. Steel's coming out of the ground, creating a new skyline as you go past the arena where the ballpark location is now. Steel coming out of the ground above the height of the arena. There will be, I don't know how many, whether it's 30, 35 concerts a year there for Bridgeport residents and beyond, continuing to build on us as a kind of a center in the county and in this part of the state for people to enjoy. One thing, and I was at a comedy club downtown 2 weeks ago. We had an event there, phenomenal entertainment. People lined up around the building. And, you know, I could keep going about some of the stuff, but the amphitheater, for people who don't know it, as they say, stay tuned. Stay tuned for that and the other things that are coming out of the ground and happening, like on Bridgeport's waterfront, where the new restaurant is, Steel Point, and so on. You see the boat docks there? This spring, that'll be full of these kind of, I can't afford one, but one of these big boats that people will be able to drive into and make that part of Bridgeport and our city even more of a destination. So I'm excited for that as it builds our awareness, but also builds dollars coming into the city to support the residents and all of us.
Joe, we've been very patient. Do you know who the opening act is going to be for the amphitheater? Like, oh, I'm God, really excited.
I've heard, I'll tell you what we can do on the show.
Let's do it. What?
We can kind of like, put some shout-outs out there. Who do we want? Have some people call in. Because Jimmy Koplik, who is just a phenomenal human being and very successful because he's just a great person and a great businessman who runs Live Nation for Connecticut and parts of New York, he'll listen to us. You know, he's an affable guy, just a fun, real good person. And so if Bridgeport wants, a certain individual, he'll do all that he can. Now, they're booking those now. I didn't realize they booked these things almost a year in advance. So
right, that's why I thought.
Heard.
Well, that's why I thought you'd have like the inside scoop.
Who do you want?
Who do I want? Oh my gosh! Well, I just heard that Elton John is coming to New York City, but I can't afford the tickets. So if he could come to the amphitheater, I would love that. I don't know if you have any.
Elton John. I love Elton John. The Eagles. There's a lot of really good performing artists that we could probably get. So we got to just, let's talk about it a little bit more and see. And by the way, you know, it's all fun for the first act, but there's going to be plenty.
I'm sure
we'll get an opportunity, even if it's not the first one, to see all these great artists. But a shout out again to it's Howard Safon and Jimmy Koplik, who stepped up, have a vision for Bridgeport, have a vision for success. And they're going to put those two together at the amphitheater. And it's really a great thing.
Tone, who do you want?
Tony Bennett.
Oh, wow, you were fast to say that.
Yes.
All right.
Tony Bennett, absolutely.
That's who Tony wants.
I always wanted to see Tony Bennett, but I don't want to go into the city to see him. If I can get right on the turnpike and drive 15 minutes up the road and get off at whatever it is, 28, to see Tony Bennett, I would do that, yes. But you got to book it in the summertime. I'm not coming up in the cold weather. I have many, many.
Did you get that, Mayor? So make sure it's the summer.
Yeah.
Between July 1st and August 1st, please, Tony Bennett.
It's fun to be able to have this conversation grounded in reality. What's really happening.
Hey, Mayor, I thank you so much for taking a few minutes. I know you're busy. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity. All the best.
Here's one that falls under the category of why can't this happen to me? An elderly woman in France had the surprise of her life last month when she discovered an old painting in her home was worth more than $26.6 million. The painting was found in a city in northern France where it had been hanging above a hot plate in this woman's kitchen for many, many years. Now, according to the BBC, the woman believed that it was simply a religious piece with no real value. Well, she was very, very wrong. An auctioneer spotted the artwork, and it measures about 8 inches by 10 inches, and suggested that the woman have a series of tests performed using what they called inferred light to determine its worth. Okay? Now, they did all of that, and the test indicated that the painting was made by a famous pre-Renaissance Italian painter. I'm going to botch his name, Cini di Pepo. and it's entitled Christ Mocked. The piece is believed to be part of a painting that consists of three or four panels created in 1280 depicting Christ's crucifixion. Now, the auctioneer, after all is said and done, they valued the painting at about $7,700,000, but it sold for $26 million at this particular auction house. Somebody bought it and they preferred to stay anonymous. Can you believe it? I mean, it was hanging in her kitchen for years and years and years. She thought it was just, you know, not worth anything to anybody but me.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's worth like $26 million. She's living on Easy Street now. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Tony, we had the opposite luck in our house. I don't know if you've ever had this happen, but my grandmother, my Jewish grandmother, she used to collect Chagalls, which I'm not big into painting or art or anything, but it's a very big deal. Chagall is a big deal and is a very famous name to be collecting. So my grandmother had five or six of these in her house. And when my grandmother passed away, of course, it kind of landed on my parents to sort of, you know, clean out the house and, you know, donate or whatever the case may be. And I remember my mom said to my dad, oh my gosh, you know, your mom never wrote down who the Chagalls should go to. And my dad said, well, I guess we should find out how much they're worth. And, you know, my parents kind of did like a preview of like looking to see, you know, what would it typically go for? I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars. So my parents are like, whoa, this kind of fell into our laps. This is pretty cool. Yes, she had copies. They weren't real. So they were worth like $25 a piece. They were like, we're just going to donate them.
Yeah, there
it's
go.
Like, come on, Grandma.
Yeah, you never know. You never know what's in your house. You never know. My dad had a friend. I'll never forget him. His name was Pepper Martin. Never forget him. And his mother-in-law died. They went and they cleaned out the attic. And she was a paint collector. She loved paintings, but she didn't know what she was doing. She just liked it and she bought it. And they were all in her attic. There was like 20 of them in her attic. And Pepper turns around to his wife and says, what do you want to do with this stuff? I'm just going to throw it away. Oh, no, Mom liked those. It's got sentimental value. Okay. On a whim, he went and had them appraised. And when the guy appraised them, he said, look, I'll take them all off your hands. I'll tell you what, I'll give you $10,000. And Pepper went like this. 10 grand. If you're willing to give me 10 grand right here in my driveway, what are these worth? And he made quite a bit of money on those paintings.
Wow.
So you never know. You never know what you have, you know?
That's wild.
Yeah. We had, I had a Beatles record player. You would open it up and there were the Beatles. There was a picture of them and you play records on it and everything like that. Okay. And when you get older and everything like that, you forget all about it. I said to my mother, I says, where's that record player? Oh, well, are you kidding me? You trashed it. We threw it out. It's the most sought-after piece of memorabilia when it comes to the Beatles. You can't find it anyplace, and if you do find it in good shape, it's worth a pretty penny. So.
Yeah, well, that's how I feel about all the Beanie Babies we collected over the years, Tony. I mean, we got, I think, every amazing Beanie Baby from when they first started getting, you know, when they first went onto the market years and years and years ago. And now if you go online, people are going to spend $500 for a single Beanie Baby. And I look at most of them, either they were completely just ruined and tarnished or whatever, or we just can't find them anywhere, or we already donated them and gave them away. And I thought, dang it, why didn't I take better care of my toys?
Yeah,
come on.
That's the way that it goes. Question of the day, should we keep changing the clocks twice a year? That's the question. Now, this weekend, you're going to fall back, which means we're going to gain an hour of sleep, if you will. But then the next day, it gets dark, and it gets dark early. And like I said, you're in the dark all the time for the next couple of months until we change it again in the spring. Okay, and this is probably the longest period of time that we have to sit here and do this. I mean, in the summertime, it goes by like this.
Mm.
But in the wintertime, it just drags on and on and on and on and on. Yeah, you know, myself, like my wife. My wife gets very, not upset, but she's like, oh, you know, it's going to be dark out now when I get in the car, you know. And it doesn't make any difference to me. It's dark every time I get into the car
right.
anyway, you know. it's just that some people get annoyed that you're leaving in the the dark, you're coming home in the dark, especially if you work until 5:30 at night. Mm-hmm. That could be a problem. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know for myself, it's never really been too much of an issue, I'd say, for me, Tony. I know I, especially getting into morning news, I actually like the fact that it's darker earlier because then I don't feel so crazy. And when everybody else wants to go to bed, it's like, haha, me too, because I have to go to bed. Mm. So it's always been great for me, quite frankly, but I know a lot of people, it honestly kind of triggers depression, sort of those winter blues, if you will. And I know this is sort of the beginning. I always said growing up, I think I kind of grew up in a household where my mom, she always made it a point that every week she would actually track the time that the sun would come up or go down, if you will. And she would always post to her social media that we gained 1 minute of sunshine, we gained 30 seconds of sunshine. For some reason, that mentality always kind of helped me. And I never really felt like things were going too slowly. So it doesn't really bother me too much, but I know a lot of people it does. A lot of states it bothers, Tony. Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Nevada, Oregon, Tennessee, and Washington reportedly have already put legislation forward to stop the twice-a-year ritual, but the bills still need to have approval from the federal government to actually put it into effect. Connecticut, as you know, is not part of that list, but it would be interesting if, in fact, we got rid of the 2 o'clock ritual every single year. So we wanted to know, what do you think? Do we keep the ritual going or should we just stop it altogether? Is this nonsense?
Well, everybody here, they seem to hate it. Jim says the clock changes are 100% tough for me, even with having somewhat of a normal schedule. When you leave work, say at 5 or 5:30 and it's already nighttime, it's rough. Yeah, you're absolutely right, James.
Yeah, Keith says that he's all for stopping. It messes him up more now that he has kids. So there you go.
Okay, Corey says, let's stop the madness. Don't change the clocks. Leave them alone.
Janine says, I lose so much sleep every time the time changes, just trying to get my body back on track. That is a good point.
Okay. Flo says, I really dislike it. You have to be safe walking dogs and driving with the technology. They got to stop this nonsense, not to mention seasonal depression. It's a known fact that a lot of people have a problem with it.
Yeah. And Casey said, the time changes serve no purpose and just cause unnecessary misery. Enough already. I couldn't care less if they leave it on daylight saving or standard time, but please just pick one and leave my clocks alone.
Ed says, split the difference and add 30 minutes, then leave it there. Okay. Good
there
idea,
go.
Ed. All right.
A nice compromise. And Sandra said, just hearing that we have to set the clocks back is so disheartening and depressing. Please leave the clocks consistent year round. Isn't it true, though, Tony? As soon as you hear people say, we're falling back. You know those really excited meteorologists? I know working in television, I always had a very excited meteorologist. I think Bill's the first one, but they'd always say, ready to fall back? And we'd all say, no, we're not.
I will say this, when we fall back and we gain that extra hour, I am psyched. I am psyched. You know, like, so in other words, you know, you're going to bed at 8 o'clock at night. It's really 7 o'clock. You know, that's nice. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it's all downhill.
But then you're kind of over it once 3 days go by and you're like, wait, I didn't gain anything.
Yeah, except wait.